Now, was that the reading you were expecting on Mother's Day? Just a little touch of violence for you. Young people, this should be one of your favorite stories. This is an unusual one. But I'm going to do what Laura did last week. I'm going to move this direction. I'm going to talk about movies a little bit. Then I'm going to move over here, and I'm going to explore these two fascinating women, Deborah and Jael, and then I'll try to come back to the middle and ask, how should we hear this good news about how God uses surprising women, surprising people to get things done in the world, okay? In 1961, NASA's space program was recruiting the best mathematical minds it could find because the U.S. was in a space race with Russia. In 1961, there were not one, black female engineers or supervisors at NASA. So segregation was in full effect in Virginia in the early 1960s. Now, there was a team of black women who worked at NASA. There were about 20 of them. This group of women was known as the West Computing Section. The women who worked in this room at NASA were referred to as computers, human computers, because they did computing and calculations. So these were women who were gifted at math. They were employed to double-check the calculations that were made by NASA's white male engineers. This was a big deal. NASA was trying to get into space, get John Glenn into orbit and to the moon before the Russians did. And so there were smart black women making an important contribution at NASA's Langley Memorial Research Lab in Virginia, but they had their own place. They were placed on the West Campus at Langley Research Center. All the white engineers and supervisors and mathematicians worked on the East Campus. Now, you're ahead of me here. This is the book adapted into the movie Hidden Figures, which was released in late 2016. It's a movie that focuses on the roles of three of these talented, gifted African-American women. Taraji Henson plays the math prodigy Katherine Johnson. In fact, the movie opens with her as a young child doing calculations on the board and just amazing her teachers that a child this young could be this gifted at math. Octavia Spencer plays Dorothy Vaughn. She was the gifted leader of this whole group of black women who were doing the calculations that helped us get into space. Dorothy Vaughn became the first black female manager that NASA ever had, but that came later. Actress Janelle Monáe played Mary Jackson, who eventually became the first black female engineer at NASA. Again, that was later. She would have become an engineer much earlier, but in the 50s and 60s, no graduate program in physics would allow her to study physics at the graduate level because she was black. So that only happened much later for her. So keep in mind, it's 1961. Virginia is part of the South. These black women, gifted beyond our dreams in terms of their mathematical abilities, they could not eat in the same restaurants. They couldn't drink from the same water fountains. They couldn't use the same restrooms as their white colleagues. When NASA was having trouble calculating the right launch trajectories and the right orbit patterns and the right windows to do the launch, the head of the space program went to to the West Campus, where these gifted black women mathematicians were working, and this guy, Al Harris, asked Dorothy Vaughn if she had any mathematicians who were gifted enough to come help them get these calculations right. She pointed immediately to Katherine Johnson as the right person for the job. And so Johnson was recruited to work in the main NASA Rocket Science Center. Now, as the movie depicts it, when Katherine Johnson first enters that big room at Langley full of white male mathematicians and engineers, she is first mistaken for the custodial help and asked to take out the trash. Later on, as the white engineers see her have the audacity to use their coffee pot, they refuse to drink from the pot where she's poured her own coffee. When the character of Al Harris, who's played by Kevin Costner, berates her at one point for leaving her desk for long periods of time when there's such great urgency to get these calculations right, Katherine Johnson has to explain to him that there are no bathrooms for colored people in that building. In fact, there were no bathrooms for colored people on the entire Langley East campus. So she's having to walk a half of a mile in heels and a dress to the West campus, to the colored campus, every time during the day she has to go to the bathroom. It's an amazing story. In spite of these very real obstacles to these women in a culture of segregation in the Jim Crow South, and on top of that, add to that the sexism, right, that dominated every single kind of workplace in the 1960s, these three brilliant black women, there were more than three, but the movie focuses on these three women made a significant contribution to NASA's success in putting an astronaut in space. The real Katherine Johnson is still alive. I think she's close to 100 now. At age 98, just a couple of years ago, she was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom for her distinguished service to NASA's space program. So if you haven't seen the movie Hidden Figures, you should check it out. Okay, enough about movies. Now I want to turn to our readings for today from Judges 4. And here we meet two heroes. Both of them happen to be women. Now, the tribes of Israel at this point had conquered, sort of, put that in quotes, conquered the land of Canaan. They had settled throughout the promised land in their tribal regions. But during this period, they were frequently in all kinds of military clashes with rival tribes and groups over boundary lines and resources. And the stories of Deborah and Jael come to us from a time when the Israelites had fallen under the rule of one of the foreign kings, King Jabin of the Canaanites. And King Jabin had an army commander named Sisera, who, we're told, led a military with 900 chariots of iron. Now, that might not sound impressive to you, but it's meant to be an overwhelming show of military force in the ancient Near East. Not only did he have a huge, intimidating army with 900 chariots, you know, which would come to you like a swarm of insects, but they had learned to do metalwork. So these weren't just wooden chariots, they were chariots made of iron. So Sisera, the army commander, his iron chariots and his army had been cruelly oppressing the people of Israel and all the tribes for 20 long years. And it's in this context that God calls these two women, Deborah and Jael. He uses these two women as a way of calling all of Israel back to wholehearted gratitude and unadulterated devotion to the Lord, which is what God wanted in the first place. So Deborah's courage and Jael's decisiveness are an invitation for Israel to turn itself back towards the light of God's goodness and God's peace. These two women are women who are not hedging their bets. They are not compromised. They symbolize a clarified and focused desire to respond to God with complete trust and utter faithfulness. So first think about Deborah for a minute. We're told that Deborah was one of Israel's judges. Now, at that time, Israel was kind of a loose confederation of tribes. They weren't a nation state unified with one king. Their judges settled cases. They were wise people who could adjudicate difficult situations. And they kind of coordinated the tribes in all their regional conflicts. So Deborah was the judge over Israel. Even though she had a husband, she was the judge, and she was also a prophet. So God spoke through her to Israel. So Deborah summons her military commander, this guy named Barak from the tribe of Naphtali, and she gives to Barak a rousing, commanding prophetic call straight from God. She says to Barak, her military commander, "The Lord God will give Sisera and his iron chariots into your hands. So gather 10,000 troops from your region and meet Sisera in battle at Mount Tabor." Right? This is God promising Barak that, "No worries, I will give Sisera into your hands." Now, did you notice how the army commander, Barak, responds to this prophetic call? He does not respond with great courage. He is not filled with confidence because of the promise that God makes to him. Instead, he sort of protects himself by hiding behind the courage and the confidence that Deborah expresses. He says, "If you go with me, I'll go, Deborah. But if you don't go with me, no way." Deborah does agree to go with him, but she warns him that God will give the glory for defeating Sisera, not to him, the military commander, but instead to a woman. And that's kind of what gets us to the story of this woman named Jael. Now, Jael is very different than Deborah. Jael has no leadership position. She's not a military commander of any sort. She is a wife. She's the wife of Heber the Kenite, we're told. Now, why does that matter? Well, it matters because Jael's extended network of family, her neighborhood, her clan, had formed an alliance with King Jabin of Canaan. So these were Israelites who were sort of double-timing, double-crossing. They liked being part of Israel, and they liked being promised blessings, but they thought, in order to keep ourselves safe, we ought to cut a deal with some bribes with the Canaanite king just to protect ourselves, okay? So here was a woman who all of her relationships and her connections were compromised. She was an Israelite, but not a very loyal one. And so when Sisera's army is defeated and he flees on foot to Jael's tent, we expect, as we read the story, that she is going to provide him safety and cover. But instead of that, Jael practices a cunning, tricky decisiveness that suggests that her deepest allegiance was always to the God of Israel. Do you follow that story? She goes out to meet Sisera and invites him to take shelter in her tent. She covers him with a blanket. He only asks for water, a small request. She extends lavish hospitality and opens a skin of milk to give him a drink of milk. But when Sisera, this great army commander, falls asleep, she tiptoes over and grabs a tent peg and a hammer and tiptoes quietly back. She puts the tent peg to his temple and then hammers him into the ground. When Barak and his armies come in pursuit of Sisera, Jael walks calmly out of the tent and says, "The guy you're looking for is in here." Now, there are some violent, gruesome scenes in the Bible, but this is probably up there near the top. It's not really a story about the violence, though. It's a story about how God uses surprising people like Deborah and then like Jael in order to deliver Israel from all that threatens her life. Okay. Now, with all that in mind, we remember, of course, that it is Mother's Day. And as we plan for this day, we thought it would be a good day for us to focus on stories about women. So there's this story about the women in Hidden Figures in the movie, as well as the story of Deborah and Jael. And these stories can remind us that God scatters abilities and gifts all over the place to women as well as to men. You just never know whom God will use to accomplish whatever needs to be done. And I hope that these surprising women can inspire all of us to make ourselves open, willing, and available to God so that God can do with us what needs to be done. God can take our experience, all the things that have come our way, all the challenges that we've had to face, and God can put our lives to use so that we can serve and bless the people around us. Friends, we need women and we need men. We need older people and we need younger people who can inspire others by living with courage and decisiveness when everything seems up in the air, everything seems in flux. Politically and economically, we are living in a time of great change. In terms of technology and innovation, we're living in a time where there's lots of change. In terms of
how people are living their spiritual lives, how people are finding purpose and meaning. There's lots of change there too. By far, the fasting growing segment of the U.S. population are those who check the box in census data saying, I'm religiously unaffiliated. That's the fastest growing segment of the U.S. population. These people aren't godless, they're not immoral, they don't hate God, none of that. They just can't see why belonging to a specific religious organization or a specific religious tradition would be meaningful or helpful to them and their families. So I sympathize with these folks. So this challenging cultural climate calls for people like us and for congregations like ours to renew ourselves, renew our own sense of mission, to be lively places where God is present at work in people's lives, creating new energy, new connections, creating a sense of belonging and believing and why that matters in all of us and in between us. Really, the story of Judges was a story of forgetfulness. With each passing generation, the people of Israel experience a kind of slippage of their memory. It gets weaker. Each generation lost touch with the living reality of the God who had delivered them from Egypt and settled them in their own land. So today, as parents and grandparents, as friends and neighbors, we have an important role to play simply in keeping alive these stories of God's goodness, the surprising way that God continues to bless and heal us. Our own lives can become visible images, visible parables for other people of how a life of friendship with Jesus Christ can be deeply joyful and satisfying. God can use all of us in surprising ways to model for our friends and neighbors the compassion and the energy of living as God's beloved friends, called to share in this work of blessing and healing the world in Jesus Christ. Now, this doesn't have to be all that profound. It can be as simple as delivering a meal to someone or writing a note or simply trying to encourage someone. It can happen in the rituals of table prayers, teaching our kids just to say thank you for this food, or by renewing our commitment to gathered worship as you have together today. We need people who are able to listen for God's voice and respond with full-hearted allegiance. We need people who are willing to respond to God's great love in Jesus Christ by loving God back with heart, soul, mind, and strength. Not unlike the period of the Judges, we are tempted to become the kind of people who hedge our bets. I'm tempted to become the kind of person who's flaky, fickle, half-baked, and compromised. We read these stories from the period of the Judges, and in them, Israel, they did move into the new promised lands, but in doing so, they failed to give their whole hearts to the God who had blessed them, delivered them, and cared for them. So their conquest was always incomplete. There was always more work to do, and friends, there's always more work for us to do. The gift of salvation, the good news that we celebrate together today, is that God has decisively delivered us from the prisons of sin and death and has delivered us now into this new kind of freedom, freedom to love ourselves, freedom to love other people, freedom for new connections, for a new purpose and meaning in life. And this new life is far from passive. In fact, it comes to us as a kind of call to action. There's always a need for God to call people to move further and deeper into the land, pressing deeper as we together listen for God's voice about what faithfulness should look like in our own time and place. But I know we got a lot going on, a lot's happening, and so we get tired. It's okay. We get distracted. That's okay. We get discouraged sometimes, overwhelmed. That's okay. That's why God has always been in the business of raising up new leaders with a fresh perspective and fresh insight so that they can inspire the rest of us and call us to another phase of faithfulness in the new challenges that we face. And we need people in this congregation and in this community who remind us that, yes, we've done some good things, but there's much more that needs to be done as we move forward. We need leaders who can point out our areas of strength and remind us that God has blessed us with all kinds of gifts and wisdom and experience so that we can meet the new challenges of the day. I spent last week in the Smoky Mountains of Western North Carolina, flew into Asheville and then drove a little ways from there. I had never been in that part of the country before. It was a conference where I was with 30 other Presbyterian pastors. That sounds like a real humdinger, right? It was crazy. But as we shared our stories together, I noticed that there were a number of women, and part of their story was that they had grown up in very conservative, traditional churches that offered extremely limited leadership roles for women. So basically, they grew up thinking that if they were a woman and they loved the church and they wanted to serve God, they could probably either work with kids or do something with music, but that was about it. So how can you blame them, right? They never saw a woman lead worship. They never saw a woman preach. They never saw a woman serve as an elder. They never saw women making important strategic decisions in the life of the church. And yet, as these women grew into adulthood, they made courageous decisions to leave their family traditions and to pursue lives to which God was calling them. And it was fun to be around these women who are now gifted, able, talented pastors leading congregations all over the country. So friends, no matter who you are, God has called you to be faithful to the life and to the gifts that you have been given. Don't worry about what gifts were given to anybody else. So be fearless. Let God pull you forward into this new life. Let God stretch you and challenge you. Because of who you are, because of what you've faced, because of your challenges, because of your failures, and because of your successes, God can use you in important ways to serve and bless other people. Good things will happen through you. And the health of our congregation, the health of our wider community, depends on all kinds of different people being willing to listen for God's call, and then when they hear it, to answer it with courage and decisiveness. If God can use surprising women to put a spaceship into orbit or to defeat a powerful army, surely God can use us to love and care for the people around us in ways that celebrate all the amazing ways that God has already loved us. Amen.